Our next speaker is Danny Nobuth. He is Professor of Psychology and Psychoanalysis at Brunel University, where he also directs the MA programme in Psychoanalysis and Contemporary Society. He is the chair of the Freud Museum and has published numerous books and papers on history, theory and practice of psychoanalysis. Danny.
Thank you very much. I'll just have to hold this in my hand. Well, 20 years ago, I was 20 years younger. So were you. I was young, I was attractive, I was verbal, I was intelligent, and I was sophisticated, but more than anything else, please don't get me to repeat what I've just said. But above everything else, fear was my only courage. It sounds a bit like a line from Bob Marley song, I think it probably is. But with all those qualities, I actually joined a small Belgian delegation, because I was working at the University of Ghent at the time. I joined a small Belgian delegation to come to London, not so much to attend this conference, but to come to the Freud Museum, partly because there was a rumour, indeed, that the Freud Museum was in trouble and could be at risk of turning into a closed museum, partly because we were preparing for a large international conference on Freud's pre-cyclic writings, which was subsequently attended by Malcolm Pines and by a couple of other people. And we were essentially putting together our own archival collection in Ghent of Freud's pre-cyclic publications. So we came to the Freud Museum to gather information, to do a lot of photocopying, to speak to people. And at that very time, this conference was going on. So we thought, well, we might as well kill two birds with one stone and pick up a bit of intellectual food on the side. So I arrived at this conference on the back of another plan. Not with the intention of promoting our own conference there, let alone with the intention or the aspiration to end up in a book by Jacques Derrida. I won't comment on the conference as a whole, but I know that it's been said that Derrida's lecture lasted 3 hours, 3.5 hours. I've heard people say it lasted 4 hours. I guess the recording, which we now have, may actually tell us how long exactly it lasted.
Three and a half hours.
Well, in my memory, it was actually very short. But maybe it's yet another example of Einstein's relativity theory, you know, that if you're an old man and a young, beautiful girl sits on your lap for a couple of hours, it still feels it was only 5 minutes, something like that. It's a bit uncouth, but there you go. So in my memory, it actually was relatively short. I do remember that Jacques was worried about taking up too much time. He was worried about killing the audience. He frequently stopped to apologize for taking so much time, and also for producing what he regarded as a preamble before the introduction and an introduction before the actual thesis, etc., etc. I also remember him saying to the audience, look, if you do want to go out to have a drink or to pick up a sandwich, please feel free to do so. I will be here when you come back. Don't worry about it. And you probably will not have missed all that much. So he felt slightly uncomfortable, but at the same time, he also felt the need to take the audience through his thought. And yes, he did deliver the lecture in English, and it was fluent and very clear. But it created a rather strange atmosphere. Now, at the end of the lecture, with my fear and courage, I walked up to Jacques Derrida, like so many other groupies or potential friends of the great philosopher, And I can't remember exactly what I said to him, but I think the sentence contained a great many unnecessary disclaimers. As in, Monsieur Derrida, je ne sais pas, I don't know, mais savez-vous, but do you know, mais probablement vous savez, probably you do, etc., etc., etc. In the end, I came to the point that I wanted to make, which was that in a particular text by Freud, Freud had talked about memory as an archive. And I'm not going to read the text because we're already taking up too much time. So I said to him, there is a text by Freud in which he talks about memory as an archive. And it's an 1898 text called On the Psychical Mechanism of Forgetfulness, which is a text in which Freud famously described for the first time his own failure to remember the name of Signorelli, with the associated screen memories that would subsequently end up in the first chapter of the Psychopathology of Everyday Life. And I remember Derrida listening very attentively to what I had to say, and him telling me that he was very grateful for the reference. And he then gave me his address at the École des Études en Sciences Sociales, and he said, please write to me and maybe we can talk about these other passages in Freud's work where he talks about memory as an archive without resorting to archaeological memories. This is, in the end, what I did. So I went back to Ghent and I wrote to Jacques. And handwritten letter, and there is a point to the writing and the way in which this exchange took place, I think. And he responded, but I could barely make out what he was saying because Derrida's handwriting was notoriously difficult to read. But he responded, and so there was a short correspondence about the notion of the archive in Freud. What I noticed from that correspondence, and it's also in the book. Oh, by the way, when the book came out, I didn't look for myself. I wasn't that arrogant, and I would never have thought that he would actually mention what I had said to him after the conference. But there is this line, and it's slightly embarrassing. There is this line, this footnote, where he says, as I was reminded by Danny Nobis after the conference, and I didn't particularly want to remind him of anything, because it would have suggested that he had actually forgotten something, and I couldn't consciously contemplate the possibility of Derrida ever forgetting anything. But to add insult to irony, I would have reminded him of him having forgotten something about a text on forgetfulness. So, anyway, so it was slightly awkward, but I do remember from the correspondence that he was, it's probably an understatement, slightly worried about the future of the archive. And he was worried about the future of the archive because 1994 was not only the time of the Freud Wars, it wasn't only the time when the Freud Museum was in dire straits, it was the time when email and other forms of electronic or computer-mediated communication was being introduced. And you find an echo of Jacques' worry about the effect of computer-mediated communication on the future of the archive. And I remember him saying to me in one of his letters, I am grateful to you that we are corresponding by letter rather than by email. And I thought, well, I probably wouldn't be able to use email because it was really in the early stages and it wasn't particularly advanced. But he was worried about that. And I will read you one passage from the book where you can see that. It's an important point because I think 20 years down the line, when we tend to communicate with each other in very different ways than how we did 20 years ago. I mean, who would still write letters? I rarely ever do. But it forces us to rethink the way we record, the way we store, the way we indeed archive, and the way we actually ensure that ideas and events do not get lost as a result of this type of mediation. But I'll read you the passage from the book, and you'll see how Derrida, at the time, and this is also the time when he had recently bought a small laptop computer, which he mentions in the book somewhere, and he approached it. I remember him saying to me, he approached it with fear and trepidation, because on the one hand, he thought it was great to be able to use it wherever he would go, and but on the other hand, he was afraid that actually things would get lost. So this is the passage from the book. Derrida writes, "One can dream or speculate about the geotechnological shocks which would have made the landscape of the cycladic archive unrecognizable for the past century if Freud, his contemporaries, collaborators, and immediate disciples, instead of writing thousands of letters by hand, had had access to MCI, I'm not exactly sure what MCI is, MCI or AT&T telephonic credit cards, portable tape recorders, computers, printers, faxes, televisions, teleconferences, and above all, email." I mean, Jacques was never a technophobe or a Luddite, but he was very interested in recording thoughts. And some of you here will no doubt have read the text that he wrote on the typewriter ribbon, right? Which is also a text about memory, but it's a text about how technology affects the way we store, record, and recall. So I'll leave it at that, and ask Sarah to continue. Thank you very much.